This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
This is Raise Your Game. I'm Tasha Fusil. Now, how do you go from being a good boss to a great one? And what exactly is the definition of a great boss? With over a decade of research, Sydney Finkelstein, the director of the Center for Leadership at the Tuck School of Business at Dartmouth College, has concluded that superbosses exist in nearly every industry, from the glamorous to the mundane. So we catch up with Sydney to learn what common thread runs through these exceptional leaders. And I start with finding out what the difference is between a good boss and a superboss.
So a superboss, first of all, is someone who helps other people accomplish more than they ever thought possible. And that in and of itself suggests that that's not what your typical good boss will do. There are elements, though, what a good boss might do that are similar to what super bosses will do. They will be good mentors ordinarily, and they will pay some attention to their staff members and try to think about some of their own needs. But the way I look at super bosses is that they do regular good bosses do, but they do it to an extreme, almost like on steroids, and they do a bunch of things that are different entirely. One example, a super boss has really resurrected an apprenticeship approach to how to develop talent. And there's hardly any boss out there that really thinks about it that way. Of course, there are some, but for the vast majority, there aren't that many. And by an apprenticeship, I mean this idea of creating big opportunities for people on your team, but at the same time being very engaged, very hands-on, looking at your role as a teacher, as a coach, but also one who has personalized and customized what you're doing to each member of your team. And so a super boss really does more than your typical good boss. And the data show what the effect is, because what you really see with a super boss is a track record of spawning talent in an industry or in a sector that really is far and above it what anyone else has done.
Okay, and so is this track record the research that you did to figure out what it is that made a super boss? I mean, how did you get this notion that a super boss even existed?
I got interested in why organizations don't survive, actually, and I wrote a book called Why Smart Executives Fail about 10 years ago. And in the process of that research and working with a lot of companies, what I came to realize is that there was one thing that was above all else central to the success of any organization that allows them not just to survive, but to thrive. And that is the ability to generate and regenerate talent on a continuous basis. And that's the insight that got me going on what eventually became the Superboss research, really by looking at different industries and trying to see who's out there that has this great record of generating and regenerating talent on a continuous basis so I could learn from what they've done. And that really comes out clearly when you look at, say, the top 40 or 50 managers in an industry and you do a genealogical study of them, who they work for in their careers. And I would develop these trees of talent to figure out who are the key spawners of talent in an industry. And lo and behold, virtually every industry, there's one person that is far and above everybody else. And that person, that super spawner of talent, I ended up calling a super boss.
So it really, the case being made here is that a good boss isn't a good boss on his own. I mean, it comes from years and years of mentorship and guidance from way beyond, like, so that potential is developed very much early on in their career.
Well, you know, the truth is that any boss, certainly any good boss, has the potential to elevate their game and become what a super boss does. And if you really think about it, the way to win in virtually any field of endeavor, whether it's business or something else, is to surround yourself with super great people and create an environment where they can accomplish so much, because that, of course, is going to help you as the leader of the team. And that's not a new idea. Well, it turns out that super bosses do it in a bunch of ways that others haven't really looked at, haven't really understood, haven't really appreciated the nuances of what they do. And so anyone can become a super boss. Anyone can elevate their game to get there. But there is really a big difference. And that difference is easy to see when you ask, who's worked for you in the past that's gone on to great success, whether your own organization or somewhere else? And are you still in touch with them? And do you still end up working or building opportunities with them? Mm. And those questions are very revealing to see, are we talking about a super boss or are we talking about somebody else?
So there are some, you know, usual suspects that one might assume are super bosses. And I've read in an article that you classified Jack Welch as a person who wouldn't make that list. Why not?
The reason why I don't put Jack Welch in that list is because General Electric, GE, was a great spawner of talent. before Jack, during Jack, and after Jack. In other words, it wasn't him. Mm. It was the organization. And that, of course, that's a good thing. That's actually what I'm doing a lot of my own follow-up and consulting work on, how to help organizations institutionalize some of the Superboss ideas through a variety of consulting tools and other methods. And so that's a good thing, but that doesn't make Jack Welch a Superboss himself, because the whole organization was built to do all of that. That's the only reason.
So before you said that, ultimately, what makes a boss a Superboss is their ability to provide mentorship on steroids. And, you know, their ability to spawn talent. How do they spot gifted people?
Yeah, well, that's a good question, because they really are always out there. I call them talent spotters, in fact. And that's part of the answer right there. That's the first answer to the question, which is they're always on the lookout for great talent. You know, if you're not looking and you're waiting for the resumes to cross your desk, well, you're actually handicapping yourself. You're limiting, you're greatly limiting the pool that you're searching towards and who ends up reaching your attention. If you're always on the lookout, wherever you go, any conversation, anything you're doing, and thinking about, is this somebody that might be able to add value, somebody with huge potential, right away you're going to increase your ability to do it. I actually think while, you know, some people certainly are better than others in identifying great talent, it's kind of like, you know, when you go shopping for a car, and you've never had that car, and you've never really paid much attention to it. Like that happened to me when I bought a Mini Cooper a number of years ago. And as soon as you start thinking about it, anywhere you go, you start seeing it. You start seeing it on the road. You never saw it before. You know, it's just human nature. It's how our brains work. Well, it turns out that spotting talent, I think, is pretty much the same thing. As soon as you put that into your head, it's kind of what you're going to do every day. You can always be on the lookout. You're not always going to find somebody, but obviously, but you're always going to be on the lookout. All of a sudden, the talent pool greatly expands. And then the second thing I would say is, and this is a bit more structured, superbosses have a very clear idea on what they're looking for. They like people that are very competitive. They like people that are very smart, and not just in terms of IQ, could be emotional intelligence. They like people who are creative, who can come up with new ideas, who are always thinking in an innovative way, and they'll specifically search for people like that. And they like people who are very flexible, who can do a lot of different things, because they're firm believers that people will get better through a variety of experiences. And a number of the super bosses, from Ralph Lauren to Julian Robertson in hedge funds, Jay Scheid in advertising, and Tommy Frist in the hospital industry, it would be a regular process for them to move people around, sometimes to areas that are far different than what they've done in the past. And that wasn't just for their personal development, although that was part of it. It was also because they wanted their expertise to be applied in a brand new way, because they had that intelligence and they had that potential, and they thought, you know, let's put this smart person that only has done, you know, accounting, let's put them into marketing and see what they start to think of. Sounds weird, but that's kind of what they would do. So when they're searching for their spotting talent, they are very much looking for people that have flexibility and adaptability in terms of how they think and how they behave.
Right, because you mentioned that Ralph Lauren once made a model the head of women's design just because she got the clothes.
That's exactly right. It's, again, not your standard HR practice, but the problem with standard HR practice is that we've been doing things in such a similar way for such a long time. I don't know that we've gotten any better at finding talent, developing talent. The same problems exist. So, you know, you get a Ralph Lauren, you learn from what he did, and others see someone who has this kind of spark, this something special, has long conversations with her, and then ends up asking her to come by the office. I'd like to offer you a job. And it floored her. She had no idea that was about to happen. But she ended up working with Ralph for 5 years and became a very influential part of the team.
It sounds like, you know, something that only a very eccentric person would ever consider doing. Or is it just because we're just so used to, as you said, following the protocol when it comes to HR practices?
Yeah, you know, it's another good question, in the sense that if I hadn't written the book Superboss, I haven't done this research and interviewed all these people, etc., and we didn't have any background about this, it does sound a little bit odd. Mm. But when you start to look at the pattern over time, as you know, I looked at 18 core superbosses and many others in different fields of endeavor, and you start to see a pattern that is hard to ignore. It's a pattern of leaders, of bosses, that keep finding and developing superstar talent and end up, in part because of that, becoming so successful. So you start to see that pattern. You say, well, it's eccentric, and nobody ever paid any attention to it. But now we know it's a formula that works, and the old formula, unfortunately, doesn't work. And yet, and this is one of my biggest critiques, really, of how organizations think about talent, leadership, managing people. You know, it is the central part of any organization. There's nothing more important. Everybody says that. But yet, compared to every other part of the organization, where we've seen so much innovation, you know, in supply chain management, in marketing, in sales, and in manufacturing, the digital revolution, there's been so much innovation in all these other areas. The most important part of an organization has seen the least innovation. And as a result, we continue to come up against the same problems and challenges we had 10 years ago and even 20 years ago. So I think the Superboss playbook, as I call it, is really an opportunity to think differently about something that's so central to an organization and has a proven track record when you look at what the Superbosses have done themselves.
We'll look at what other moves Sydney Finkelstein has listed in his playbook for Superbosses when we return here on Raise Your Game, BFM 89.9.
Build fortunes modestly. BFM 89.9.
Good morning, this is Raise Your Game. I'm Tasha Fusil. Sydney Finkelstein is with us this morning, and we're talking about the rare superhero in any company or organization, the superboss. Just before, we talked about what a superboss is, and the most defining trait of a superboss is their ability to spawn great talent that then go on to be superbosses themselves. And so we were talking about how creating opportunities for others, especially in unconventional and unlikely places, are one of the many ways of a superboss. Sydney, what else is in their playbook?
Well, when it comes to the talent and thinking about managing talent, I mentioned the apprenticeship idea as well, but they also, all superbosses have a strong vision or a belief in what they're trying to accomplish. And they're very, you know, you can call it a vision if you want, or a mission. And they're very good at communicating that. They share that. They energize people. But not only that, they unleash creativity on the part of their team members and their staff members. And that's really unusual. Most of the time, your job is, you know, do what you're told to do and make sure you hit whatever that metric is you're going for, and then come back the next day and get back into it. Well, superbosses have very high performance standards, no question about that. The bar is raised, and it's not always an easy place to work in that. You've got to work hard. It's for high aspiration people, for people that really want to accomplish a lot. But they also unleash this creativity where part of your job, not occasionally but daily, is to keep coming up with new ideas. It's really, you know, the superbosses do a bunch of counterintuitive things. And this is a really good example of this strong vision, this compelling vision. They're not going to change that. But as long as you buy into that at a very high level, they want to hear every good idea you have. They want to know anything you can think of and execute on that could help accomplish that vision. And if you start to think about that, what does that do to the people around you? It energizes them, it excites them. They know they're important. They'll have the potential to have an impact in the organization, on the team. And everybody wants that. Everybody wants their voice to be heard. Everybody wants to have an opportunity. So you end up having these great people that you're developing and helping get better. You're giving them these big opportunities. You're demanding and expecting them to perform, but also be creative at the same time. So there's a lot there that they're doing that I think is different than the typical way that teams and bosses work.
Is there an example of a superboss that unleashed that creativity in an industry that you wouldn't usually associate with creativity?
Well, you know, there are a bunch of them that I look at where they are in industries that are creative. George Lucas, you know, in special effects in film, and obviously Ralph Lauren in fashion. But if I were to look at maybe a more mainstream industry, I'd say consumer packaged goods. That's kind of a nuts and bolts industry. A lot of food products and other consumer packaged products. And the superboss I'm thinking of here is Michael Miles, who was a longtime CEO of Kraft. And he was the CEO for at least 10 or 12 years. And many of the people that work for him actually became CEOs of major companies around the world, Marks and Spencer to CVS to Mattel and others. And he expected people to keep coming up with new ideas, which is kind of standard practice, what you needed to do. So I think he's probably a very good example of that.
So if I wanted to groom myself to become a superboss one day, would it be my best interest to work exclusively only for those people that I thought were superbosses, had that criteria?
Sure. It's not necessary. It's not absolutely necessary. It certainly is helpful because learning from someone who's done this or is doing this in real time, is, of course, a great way to learn. And, you know, there are plenty of people that I looked at that I studied among super bosses, where you look at the people they trained or to help develop, and then those people moved on and became big, successful people, and they're doing the same thing to their teams. So that's certainly one of the good methods, but it's not the only method, because, you could study the super boss playbook, or you can start to practice some of it yourself. And in the book, I have lots and lots of ideas on how to do that, but I'll give you just one quick one, which is this idea around customizing how you interact with people and your team or even your peers. You look at the world of marketing and sales and how precise everything is and how we customize things so carefully. You know, you go on Google, you're typing in a Google search term, and next thing you know, it knows exactly what you want, sometimes before you finish typing it in. Compare that to how we manage people and teams. We don't customize nearly as much. You know, what makes one person tick is not the same as somebody else. Well, investing some time and really getting to know the people on your team so that you can customize how you interact, how you lead them, I think is something anyone can do. It's not rocket science, but it's a core element of what super bosses do. So working for a super boss is definitely a great thing, but you can start to employ some of the tools, some of the playbook yourself to become better at it yourself.
And just to end, what advice do you have for those who are working under a super boss at the moment? I would think that it's a different experience altogether. You know, what kind of qualities or what kind of aspirations should you have if you want to continue working for someone of that caliber?
Yeah, well, first, count your lucky stars that you're working with somebody, because that gives you a huge opportunity. This, you know, in a career or in life, there are only so many opportunities that come to any person. And I've found over time that the difference between the really successful and the less successful, the really successful ones take those opportunities. They don't always succeed. No one guarantees that. But they take those opportunities and they always grow and they always learn. Working for a super boss is one of those opportunities. What do you need to do? They are demanding. And so you better be prepared. You better be prepared to work crazy hard. And they're going to expect you to, as I said, you know, about creativity, they're going to expect you to come up with ideas. Even if they don't say it, they're going to expect it. And they also, this is also interesting, they love a good fight. They love a good argument, a discussion. So many people, when they're working for a strong boss, and super bosses are strong bosses, they might think, boy, I better not get in his way and I better not challenge him. But in fact, super bosses, that's what they want. They're not going to give in necessarily very easily. You're not going to necessarily win all these debates and discussions. But if you have a different point of view, if you have ideas, they want those ideas. They expect those ideas. And I think the way to not get ahead with a super boss is just kind of keep your head down and do only what you're told. If you want to succeed and thrive and take advantage of the opportunity, you really do need to step up your game, not just working hard, but coming up with new ideas, being unafraid to challenge and have a debate and discussion when the opportunity arises. And even think about, if you have people who report to you as well, think about how to transfer some of the ideas you're learning to those people. So there's a lot that you can do that'll create those opportunities for you to do really well when you're able to work for a super boss.
Thank you so much, Sydney, for your time. It's been such a pleasure to speak to you.
My pleasure, too. Thank you.
Sydney Finkelstein, the director for the Center of Leadership at the Tuck School of Business at Dartmouth College and author of the book Super Bosses. This has been Raise Your Game, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.